from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier and I am proudly broadcasting from the beautiful state of Florida where it's approximately 75 degrees, beautiful sky and a light breeze. DC Taylor is in Pennsylvania, unfortunately, but keeping me on the air. How you doing, DC?
I'm all right, Bill. It's all good here. It's fall. We experience seasons here, Billy. I don't know about you.
Well, I'm learning of the Florida winter. I don't think I've actually been down here at this time of the year, and I'm laughing because the other night it hit 69 degrees, and I almost put a coat on. And I'm thinking, back in Pennsylvania, I wouldn't put a coat on if it's 40 degrees outside.
That's 60-some degrees in Pennsylvania. That's shorts and tank tops.
No, it certainly is. And I want to give a shout out to Rusty Fender. He'll be joining us in a few minutes. And of course, Matt Henderson, our bureau chief from Williamsport. He is actually out doing some field work today. I believe he's volunteering with one of the companies he works for, doing some stuff at the Thanksgiving week festivities, if you will. So shout out to him, and we'll have him back on next week, and we look forward to having Rusty join us here soon. A lot of things going on in the energy industry. Oil demand is set to rebound in 2021, and it looks like there's going to be a lot of reasons to support this. Oil price reports that recent gains as investors nervously watched the spread of COVID-19 have been tampered by positive vaccine news. This is all good news, according to Bill O'Grady, executive vice president at Confluence Investment Management in St. Louis, speaking to Bloomberg. And this is probably going to be, while it's probably going to be a disappointing travel holiday, the good news is that there's signs of life that global oil demand will rebound in the near term next year. People will probably start traveling again once the vaccines start to be distributed. People's tolerance level for the virus or the willingness to travel during the pandemic will improve. So I think it's positive, and I know our guest later today, Jude Clemente, is going to have a lot to say about this, but I agree with this. I believe 2021 is going to be looking a hell of a lot better than 2020, and I think people are going to be spending money traveling and getting around, because quite frankly, I don't think the world or this country can handle another 2020 and 2021. DC, what do you see and hear and thoughts on, you know, the vaccines possibly coming out in the next couple of weeks, couple of months, and what that might look like for us in 2021?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, all I've been hearing about people trying to talk about, well, when can life get back to normal? And May, June of 2021, possibly, hopefully. So you got at least a good half a year of, you know, a lot of people pent up, looking to finally get back out and do stuff. And that's, of course, going to mean a lot more energy consumption, a lot more demand for energy. So sure. I mean, we're all going to hopefully start getting back out there, and by the beginning of next summer.
I agree with you. I think the next couple of months are going to suck. I mean, we saw what happened January, February, March earlier this year, and then I thought over the summer a lot of us got back to normalcy, going to restaurants and bars and taking day trips and things. So I think it's going to happen.
Sure.
Small regulatory changes, not fracking, plague Biden's plan. This is according to S&P Global, but President-elect Joe Biden's incoming administration may not ban hydraulic fracturing of oil and gas wells outright, as some had feared during the campaign, but it may make small regulatory changes that could affect the process, like taxes, capital access, time needed for project approval, panelists say at an industry conference November 20th. While Biden has been vague on the details of his proposal to ban permitting and or fracking on federal lands, API, the American Petroleum Institute, warns that key issues could be a loss of production and jobs. And I know we've spoken about this numerous times. I don't think Biden's going to ban fracking. I think he'll try and stop it on federal lands because he has the authority to do so. Mostly hydraulic fracturing rests in the states. The states have the ability to regulate it, permit it, and design how it's going to be utilized. But I am wary of things like this. What do they call that, DC? Death by a thousand cuts. I am always afraid of the smaller things that start to add up.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
FERC eminent domain pipeline battles heat up. Rep. James Raskin from Maryland asked the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission last week to provide documents on how it handles landowner complaints about natural gas pipelines, reviving a debate about the federal role in eminent domain. The letter to the chairman of the House Oversight and Reform Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties requests that FERC produce information about a number of agency practices, including certificate expansions for pipelines and the statutes of the FERC that dispute the resolution service. Basically, people continue to fight interstate pipelines, and they look for ways to continue to harass the process. One of the things that has always been said is that FERC has the authority, if it's in the best interest of the general public, to grant eminent domain or the ability to possess land against one's wishes to get a pipeline project built or even, you know, a power project built if need be. Typically, that only extends to interstate lines that will be taking energies from, say, Pennsylvania and moving it to New England. But people have continued to fight and fight and fight and fight. So it will be interesting if anything changes. Now, again, I don't believe, because I'm sure somebody's going to ask, well, what can Biden do in his administration? I believe legislation would have to be passed to change or adjust FERC, because FERC's supposed to be independent, even though the existing president gets to appoint FERC commissioners as the spots open up. But it will be one of those things. Can FERC remain independent, and what this all adds up to be? What else do we have going on here? Utility applications for natural gas pipelines approved. Michigan Public Service Commission has approved a Consumer Energy's application to build a wider natural gas pipeline across the mid-Michigan area, 36 inches wide, and replace an existing 20-inch line north of Lansing. So the reason I'm sharing that is it's good to hear that we can actually occasionally get pipelines built in certain areas, even though other parts of the country have become difficult to work in. Appalachian news. Renewables, GOP supermajority looms large over energy and environmental groups in the 2021 state legislative priorities. This coming out of West Virginia, new battle lines have been drawn in the state legislature, with renewables poised to seize larger shares of West Virginia's energy market, where coal and natural gas remain king. Backed by energy groups, Republicans gained their first supermajority in both chambers with election wins earlier this month. If they can keep rank next session, Republicans can advance or halt any bills without the need to win any Democrats on their side. The dynamic will take center stage against a familiar backdrop. And of course, West Virginia is a very pro fossil fuel state, and it's indicative of kind of where people, policies towards fossil fuels, especially on the western side of Pennsylvania and even in Ohio, they all kind of follow the same beliefs. And of course, we've talked about this before, but the Ohio River Corridor, as they call it, Pittsburgh, West Virginia, and Ohio, they have a lot to accomplish out there. There's talks of more cracker plants, more manufacturing, just more opportunities that this energy industry is really going to be the foundation of. So I'd hate to see a state like West Virginia pivot too much. And here in Pennsylvania, we've talked about it too. The House and the Senate in the state have remained in Republican control, and in some regards, some seats were added. So it'll be interesting to see what Pennsylvania does. Pennsylvania being a much bigger state than West Virginia and Ohio, we really have a diverse diverse offering of political beliefs. But I think you have a divided government here in PA that's going to continue to at least promote or allow the development of this resource, natural gas, in hopes of it being a conduit for economic development, especially as we transition out of the COVID pandemic that we find ourselves in. I believe the state earlier this week, I believe they passed the budget, which isn't going to raise any new taxes, create any new revenue streams. It basically holds spending as is, and it's going to kind of just get us through the next couple of months until next budget season. I believe the governor is going to sign it, though I know some people are frustrated that there wasn't more spending, there wasn't more effort to raise taxes. So that's something we'll have to talk about in the coming weeks once the governor officially signs the budget. Maybe we'll have somebody on from Harrisburg to tell us about what's going on down there. But with that being said, why don't we kick it over to Fender's Fast Facts, see what Rusty has for us today.
And thanks, Bill. Of course, we certainly hope retail has a better Christmas holiday season than they did throughout this past year, which was kind of tough on everybody. And as we look ahead, there's still one big shopping day ahead. And DC Taylor knows that that is Cyber Monday coming up. Cyber Monday.
Yeah.
According to the e-commerce, one of the first e-commerce press releases was a press release called shop.org, shop.org. And the actual term was coined by Ellen Davis and Scott Silverman, two of the editors-in-chief of shop.org, Cyber Monday, coined that term. Cyber Monday, to this date, 2020, Cyber Monday 2016 was the biggest Cyber Monday yet, hitting $1.7 billion in online spending in 24 hours.
2016, okay.
2016. That's a 17% year-over-year increase from when it started. Mm-hmm. Cyber Monday, of course, is a social tool. In 2016 on Facebook, referral traffic for top retailers spiked 240% using the term Cyber Monday in the search engine.
Wow.
So I guess the deals or whatever, coupons or whatever would come up under that, you know, rather new moniker.
Okay.
In the past, DC, the average amount spent online per person over Thanksgiving weekend, we're in the process of that now, was $172.42, $172. That's not too shabby, but the average online shopper spent $194.46 on Monday, 13% higher.
Wow.
Over 10 years.
Okay.
Cyber Monday's always higher.
Yeah.
In 2015, Cyber Monday online sales grew to a record $2.98 billion compared with $2.65 billion the year before in 2014. Of course, the Cyber Monday score.com reported that online spending on Cyber Monday jumped 25% in 2019 to $608 million, a 21% increase of $733 million over 2018. This is an incredible statistic. Every second of every day, 365 days a year on the average, every second of every day, Amazon sells 320 products per second.
Wow. Okay.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Every second. Wow.
Every second of every day, 24/7 by 365.
320 products. Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
Okay.
And, we all know the facts we just heard about shop.org. When was the first Cyber Monday, DC Taylor? What year?
I'm going to go back to 2008.
You're a couple off on this one. 2005.
Okay.
I wouldn't have known. Right. I would have thought it was a little bit later, like 2007 or 2008 as well. Right. 2005, the term was coined. Of course, the biggest online shopping day was the Monday following Thanksgiving. And of course, that goes back to that shop.org press release. So we hope you get all the bargains that you're looking for out there, either this weekend or on Cyber Monday. Bill?
Thanks, Rusty, for your Fender's Fast Facts. We appreciate them. We're going to take a quick break on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned for more after word from our sponsors.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
There's plenty of time to get your new roof installed before winter with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat-eating needs.
meats. Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue. Nice.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Cabot Oil and Gas partners with the Weinberg Food Bank to battle food insecurity in Northeast PA.
It's the partnership of foundations and the companies like Cabot that really enable us to be successful.
Gene Brady, president of the Weinberg Food Bank.
We are very blessed. Those regions that have the presence of the gas industry in this area really enables us with things like Bill Glass with Hope, Hunter Share the Harvest, other donations that traditionally have been made to help food banks in their mission to end hunger in Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. It's my pleasure to welcome a good friend of the program, Jude Clemente, someone who I actually apologize for not having on the program. It seems that, Jude, you've been a busy man, and when I try to catch up with you via Twitter, social media, email, it looks like you're always writing new articles, running around, and maybe even at a different spot. I see a little bit at Real Clear Energy now. How's everything going, and tell us what you've been up to.
I'm doing pretty good. I've been editing some good articles at Real Clear. Some really good stuff. We get Robert Bryce, if you know him. We have Rupert Darwal. He's our senior fellow. So we get a ton of stuff. We actually had the head of the DOE, Dan Brulette, sent us some stuff that we published that he wrote. So doing very good there. Basically, I've been editing more stuff so than writing. I might do a couple articles a month. I don't quite write as much as I used to. I used to do 10 or 11 or 12 a month. But I kind of simmered that down, and I got a new iPad Pro, so I've been reading a lot more, getting into some other areas as far as energy goes, things like that. But I still publish on Rig Zone. I just did an article on Rig Zone for the LNG comeback, which, of course, was not supposed to happen, but we're already back to exporting record levels of LNG. So that's a great thing. And, focusing on oil and gas. Doing some electricity stuff, what's going to happen with electrification. President-elect Biden is looking at more electric cars. Well, that's going to require a mining revolution, and it's also going to require an electric generation boom. So just thinking about policy, what policies could be in place. And I really see President-elect Biden potentially going back to what we saw under President Obama. I don't think it's going to be that. I don't see the extreme policies coming, the Green New Deal and a giant carbon tax and all that. I don't see any of that. But I do see some, center-left policies. A lot of it does have bipartisan support, but generally more shift to what we saw under President Barack Obama. I see that somewhat being reinstalled under a Biden-Harris administration.
Well, you've covered a lot there. We might have to have you back on next week to keep going with it. But let's dive a little bit deeper in, say, the Biden-Harris administration. Some, have criticized or warned, rather, that Biden might move to ban fracking. He might move to undo everything that Trump did / undo under Obama. You've already kind of said it. Do you see Biden going to that extreme? I don't think personally Biden will go to that extreme. I do think he's going to change some things about the Trump energy policy and align him more with Obama. But there's some that feel that if Biden doesn't complete his presidency or steps away or something, that Harris might take it further. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I think that is possible. That last part that you mentioned, with Harris being a little more extreme. I think that is probably a true statement. What I would say right now is, you know, you're going into 2021. We do obviously have COVID. That's the number one thing. What's the response to COVID? Climate energy will be secondary to anything that's involved in stopping COVID. You've seen the vaccines are coming out. All great news. You have some bipartisan, really bipartisan concepts. And one of those concepts is infrastructure, manufacturing. I see some bipartisan support for long distance transmission lines that could bring in more renewables. You know, basically getting center, you know, energy, wind power from the from the Great Plains into Chicago. That's how I kind of describe it to people. How do you do that? We're going to need more transmission lines. So I do think that is certainly something that, you know, bipartisan, we can work on. I see research and development. I see that's a bipartisan issue. Potentially carbon capture and storage. I think that's a bipartisan issue. But the very simple reality, and I would try, I always use this perfect example, is every day the U.S. uses about 400 million gallons of gasoline. That's 400 million gallons of gasoline we consume every day. And wind and solar have absolutely nothing to do with that. So their sources of electricity, it's more aptly termed wind and power electricity, not necessarily wind and power energy. Energy is the pie. Wind and solar compete a slice of that pie. So we're going to need all of it. I definitely think there's some pro-renewable stuff coming, but there is a demand reality that any administration is going to face. Flying, just take jet fuel. I mean, we're not going to have an electric-powered battery for a 737 anytime soon. So there's a demand reality that they'll confront. The fracking, you know, federal policy on production, I'm a little concerned about the Gulf of Mexico oil supply. I'm a little concerned about the slowdown in leasing. I think that's potentially coming on federal land, but you could get some lawsuits there. But the fracking ban, I'm not overly concerned about that because Biden said he would not do that. We'll see how things go. But the one state I do worry about, for instance, here in Pennsylvania, we only get about 1% of our gas supply from federal areas. The problem area would be for a fracking ban, quote unquote, would be in New Mexico. New Mexico gets about 65-70% of its oil and gas from federal areas. New Mexico would be in a little bit of a predicament, but we could switch to private land. A lot of these producers could go to private land, which it's the fracking revolution has been a private land thing to begin with. So they could switch over. So I don't think it'd be a death knell. Benny Stretch, and I look at it as I'm a numbers guy. So I look at it as under President Trump, the industry has 100, whatever you want to mark it as 100. Under a Biden, they would have it at about a 90 or 91, maybe an 89, like a B plus, A minus. That's how I see it. So a little bit of a shot, but certainly not a knockout blow by any stretch. Our demand is too high.
I couldn't agree more with you on that, especially as it comes to Biden. His connections, you know, being seen as the blue collar guy and the union guy, I think you look no further than something like the Shell cracker plant, which I think COVID has demonstrated the need for more plastic products, and those plastic products are derived out of the hole in the ground, whether people realize them or not. And the same could be said about petrochemicals, cleaning supplies, things like that. So I think as you were saying, the focus remains on COVID and makes it more difficult to transition us away immediately away from fossil fuels or the keep it in the ground movement. And I agree, and we've talked about it on the show at length. The thing that a Biden administration could do from day one is stop future federal development on land. And for places like New Mexico or even Colorado, they derive so much of their revenue from there. But like you said, the industry will adapt. I mean, the industry did succeed under Obama, even when Obama famously said you can't drill your way to prosperity. What did the industry do? They drilled their way to prosperity. Yeah. So I think the industry will adapt. Before I forget, you had made a mention to solar and wind, and we talk about them on this show frequently. Granted, the show is more biased towards natural gas and fossil fuels, but we recognize the importance that they have. Earlier in the summer, when COVID was hitting and I was kind of looking for something to do, I bought a book, Superpower, written by Russell Gold, One Man's Quest to Transform Americans' Energy. I have a new appreciation for what solar and wind actually have to go through to move that power. You had mentioned the Great Plains. That's where the rich, you know, wind power is. But just about every state has a different set of rules, laws, and things that have prevented high power transmission lines from crossing states where the power could be generated affordably and getting it to the areas that need it. And I was laughing that high power transmission lines are almost the same fight that pipelines have to go through when it comes to the solar and green energy. Have you studied that much or looked into the history of how many of these high power wind and solar lines that have been blocked?
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing, right, is I've actually seen, and more of these articles came out a couple of years ago, but basically that it's harder to site some of these transmission lines than it actually is to site a pipeline. You have different jurisdictions involved. You have pushback from landowners. Does it lower your property value? That's a question that's up in the air. A lot of times people don't talk about that. You actually have environmental groups pushing back on some of these concepts. And a perfect example is off the coast of New England, everybody wants offshore wind. Okay, offshore wind sounds great, but guess who's against offshore wind is fishermen. So they're the ones that are actually out there in environment. So I just have a problem with someone like Al Gore, you know, being seen as an environmentalist when he's flying. Oh, he's no more an environmentalist than the man in the moon is. The real environmentalists are the people that are actually out there in nature. You know, their livelihood depends on it. And a perfect example is fishermen. And you see this in San Francisco, the same thing. So you kind of have this pushback within environmental groups. In the environmentalists, I would argue we're all environmentalists. Have you ever met someone that's pro-pollution? I haven't. So it's all these words. You know, it's 1984 with George Orwell. You know, they changed the wording on things. We're all environmentalists. And there is a reality in a lot of ways about wind and solar they have sweet spots. They're not the same throughout the country. In California, this was the biggest problem, I think, under President Obama, his EPA, is they wanted to use California as the example for other states. California is about 45% of our solar generation comes from California. Well, I lived in San Diego for 8 years, guys. I'm now in Pittsburgh. I'm actually in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. No kidding. He lived right down the street from me. Trust me, Pittsburgh is not as sunny as San Diego. So, of course, California has a lot of solar opportunity, Florida and Arizona, but not every state has the same wind and solar opportunity as other states. So it's not one size fits all by any stretch. And a lot of times, you know, you get where the sun is and where the solar wind opportunity is not necessarily where the people are. So you have this pushback on these transmission lines that are just as strong as pipelines. But generally speaking, it does have some bipartisan support. And there's no question these are growing sources of energy. They're growing. I mean, there's no doubt about that, much more so than coal. But the idea that they're going to displace oil and gas, you know, to any meaningful, significant way for many, many years is foolhardy to me. And that's why you're starting to see a lot of focus on hydrogen. Hydrogen is an interesting concept. And it's we've got to have a suite of solutions. And natural gas is clearly part of that solutions suite, because we've been cited as reducing our emissions faster than any other country in the history of energy by the International Energy Agency. That's what they have exactly said. We are reducing our emissions faster than anybody thanks to natural gas. Not my words, the words of the Paris-based International Energy Agency.
I'm glad you brought that up. And again, there's so many different ways to take this, but I know a lot of people have said, what was it, election week, I think, when we officially withdrew, completed our withdrawing of the Paris Climate Accords. And one of the things that, here I am saying Obama, Biden has said that he's going to do is rejoin those accords. Do you see the efforts that, as an industry and a country, that we've been able to undertake to reduce our carbon footprint, our emissions output, joining the accords, you see that as a negative, or rejoining them, is that a negative? Will that hinder what we're doing? Will it just be as you had used before, a death knell to certain industries? What are your thoughts on us, I guess, possibly rejoining those accords?
Yeah, I don't think I think there's no question we're going to be rejoining the accords. I'd like to see a little more with China and what China's doing. The problem I have with all this, though, I almost said what India's doing. The problem is that there are such poor countries in this world, and this is a whole. When you look at a country like India, where 70% of the people, there's 1.4 billion people in India, use biomass. So the idea that we here in the United States would have all the energy at our fingertips, would force these poor countries to use only wind, only solar, I think is morally bankrupt, if you want me to be frank about it. But I would say China is much more energy saturated to a degree, where they have more energy options. People are using a ton of electricity in China. It's not energy deprived as much as India or Pakistan or Bangladesh or Nigeria. So I'd be very curious about what China is going to do. They said they're going to be net zero by 2060. Well, that's like me saying, you know, my three daughters are going to go to Harvard Law School. Like, let's see it before, you know, you can't prove it wrong in 2020. I'm not wrong. I haven't had the opportunity to prove it not to be true. But your newborn son is going to be, you know, the quarterback for the Steelers. Well, let's see it. You know, the promises are cheap. Let's see what actually happens. But the importance of gas, I think, is shown in the Paris Accords is Germany. Nobody in Europe has been more based on reducing emissions than Germany. They spent hundreds of billions of dollars. They're looking at spending trillions of dollars to lower their emissions. They have electricity prices three times what ours are here in the United States. And number two, they're now, oh, by the way, they're now looking at building three to four LNG import facilities in their country to get access to gas. And if they don't want to get U.S. gas, guess what? They're going to have to turn to Mr. Putin and Russia to get gas from them, which are already doing on Nord Stream 2. So to me, Germany has a declining population. So all these countries in Europe that are in the Paris Accord, a lot of them are not growing. So their incremental demands are very small. How can we expect a country like India to drastically limit their energy options? They're trying to get anything they can. And their number one problem, number one thing they're trying to solve is energy deprivation, poverty, and advancing human development. And I'm sorry if I don't take offense to that, because I think that is their moral obligation, is human development more than anything. That's how energy deprived they are. So we need to help those countries get access to modern fuels, namely U.S. LNG.
Well, and you started off the top of the interview discussing about how it looked earlier this year that the United States was going to be down on its LNG exports, but we're marching towards a very strong year, and we might even hit or set some new records in the coming months on LNG. Let's spend a little bit more time talking about that. We, under President Trump's administration, we saw an expansion of that, the market, and now it's been the ability to get that gas, that liquefied natural gas, to other parts of the world. And then, funny enough, we have the ability to expand our LNG capabilities through creative means. And we have, I'm throwing out rail. So the idea of liquefying inside the country instead of along the coast, and using rail to move that both for our own use, but also to ports and stuff, we have a lot of people trying to block that. So the LNG revolution, if you will, is still kind of in flux in my mind. We're not even at full capacity, and the world needs so much more of it, but yet it may not. We may not accomplish these things in the next couple of years under a Biden administration. But what are your thoughts on LNG, where we're at, where we're going, and how we can do it better?
Well, the main thing to me is, yes, we are setting records. We're now up over 10 BCF per day for feed gas demand. That was not supposed to happen. We're now exporting LNG to 40 countries. Oh, by the way, this is an industry that really started in February of 2016. Where Cheniere Energy is being passed down in Louisiana. Yes, we've been exporting LNG from Alaska since the 60s, only to Japan, though. And also, so this industry here exporting shale gas started in February of 2016. We're now the third largest supplier after Qatar, or after Australia, after Qatar. I personally think we are on track to become the largest supplier within 5 years. I have not seen any major shift during COVID to change that projection. Might take a couple years longer, might take a couple years shorter. Who knows? But we're on a great trajectory. We have about 50 BCF per day of capacity under consideration. That's coincidentally, that's the size of the global market. So not all those contracts are going to go forward. Some of the best will. But I do think in some ways, President-elect Biden could actually help in some ways. If he would lower trade tension with China, that could be seen as a positive for the industry. China is still the largest importer. But I see a very positive outlook for LNG. Domestic consumers, I talk with them all the time. I try to explain to them exports are a good thing if you're a domestic consumer. Go back to the Wealth of Nations. Go back to Adam Smith. All you have to do is to look at that and you realize the value of exports. If we can export gas, it incentivizes production. And also, LNG is critical to net zero goals, net zero carbon. You're seeing this. We are seeing again and again companies and even some countries saying they're going to be net zero, which to me, you know, saying it and actually doing it, it's down the road. So like I mentioned before, but my kids going to Harvard Law School, you can say anything. It doesn't mean it's going to come to pass. By the time it doesn't come to pass, no one believes it, or no one's there to call you a liar to begin with. But basically, BP is major net zero. They're doubling their LNG portfolio. Shell, major net zero. They're booming their LNG. All these different net zero companies for gas. They're looking at Total just did a net zero delivery. I think it was to China. There's been like 10 net zero LNG deliveries. So that is another way the industry is modernizing, constantly evolving. And LNG, to me, has been advocated around the world as a key energy source, not just because it's clean, but it can also back up wind and solar. Yes, we want more wind and solar, but there are physical and cost limitations to them that have to be recognized. You just can't ignore them. Ask California. They're now looking at – and Germany, like I mentioned. These are reality things that people just cannot wishfully push away. Let me 1 second to give you this one line. I always tell people wind and solar power, yes, they're growing. It's great to have more of them. But renewables are not competing against oil and gas as oil and gas are now, but as they will become. So these industries are always evolving. Oil and gas is always evolving. I think that gets forgotten. And a perfect example of that is the fracking revolution itself. Nobody saw that coming. Go back to 2005, Lee Raymond at Exxon. He said U.S. gas production, North American gas production had peaked. He said that in 2005. He's the head of Exxon. He didn't see the fracking revolution. Next thing you know, our oil production boomed 160% to 2019, and also our gas production jumped 75%. So the industry itself doesn't know what's where we're going to be. So don't pick energy winners and losers with policy. These things are always advancing. And I think that gets completely forgotten.
And that is part one of our discussion with Jude Clemente here on the show. We'll have part two coming up next week. I'm DC Taylor, along with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. This is the Shale Gas News. Please stay here for more.
Do you know the power of America's energy security? Security that starts right here? The Marcellus Shale alone contains enough energy to meet our demand for the next 100 years. And that's just by today's estimates. If Pennsylvania were a country, it would be the fifth largest producer of natural gas in the world. All thanks to the incredible natural gas production right here in northeastern Pennsylvania. Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Linde Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Linde is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindeco.com. And remember, if Linde wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000, Montrose, 278-7368.
We've now been partnering for a couple of years with Cabot to provide what we call Fill a Glass with Hope. In this past year, we served hundreds of kids, and we provided nutritious milk in a quantity of 6,462 half gallons. We're grateful, as are the hundreds of children that are receiving the benefits of the program as a result of what Cabot and its partners do.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Welcome to the Energy Update, presented by the Institute for Energy Research for the week of November 30th, 2020. I'm Alex Stevens. There's a couple things I want to highlight for listeners this week. On the blog, we have a few new articles from the staff, including an article on the UK's decision to ban the sale of new gasoline and diesel cars in 2030. We also have an article outlining the details of Arizona's plan to go carbon-free by 2050. Arizona utility regulators approved new rules mandating electric companies provide 100% carbon-free energy by 2050 with interim benchmarks. Arizona joins other states in this endeavor, including New York and neighboring California, but unlike other states, the new rules do not include a requirement for utilities to use a specified amount of renewable energy, such as solar and wind. They do, however, include energy efficiency requirements and battery storage policies for utilities. Utilities can meet the new rules by generating electricity using renewable energy or nuclear power and by reducing demand through those mandated energy efficiency measures. Finally, I want to highlight the latest episode of the Plugged In podcast. My guest this week was Steve Hayward. We discussed the 2020 election and what it means for energy policy going forward. Here's a short clip of that episode. Shifting to the election, obviously, I mentioned that, you know, this was something that we discussed last time we talked. Sort of a surprising outcome. The GOP picked up some seats in the House, and it looks like they're going to hold the Senate. Joe Biden, obviously elected. Can you give us just sort of a lay of the land, I guess, of how we should be thinking about this divided government? And then what should classical liberal or limited government people be focusing their attention on in terms of energy policy with this government going forward?
Yeah, this is the I'm an academic political scientist and historian, partly by background and formal training. And I think this may be the strangest presidential election in American history. I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this, where, first of all, I'll go through a couple points here that are just amazing to me. The incumbent president, Mr. Trump, he got 11 million, as of today's count, more votes than he got 4 years ago. Normally, incumbents who are defeated lose a lot of votes from their first election. That was true of Hoover, Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush. It's astounding that you could gain as much political support as Trump did and apparently lose. We're still fighting about vote counts and all the rest. Okay. And it's also unheard of for someone to get a record number of votes for president, as Joe Biden did, and have his party do so poorly all the way down the ballot, not just House and Senate, but state legislatures, too. In other words, if you just forget the presidential election, this election was a stunning triumph for the Republican Party. And it's freaking out everybody these days, including some Republicans, I think, who expected to lose. So now it's a confusing scene because everyone says, well, we're going to have gridlock in Washington. And my first pass on this is that I like gridlock. Gridlock, as I joke, is the next best thing to constitutional government. And usually when you have gridlock, it means the government's not screwing things up even worse. And maybe, I don't know, you can be optimistic and say you might get some bipartisan cooperation on some mild reforms to entitlements and spending. Possible. I don't know. I doubt it, but it's not impossible. Meanwhile, I think it's quite clear that the Green New Deal is completely dead for the time being. A lot of other extravagant ideas of the environmental left and other parts of the left, I think, are dead for the time being. So the big question is the Biden administration going to try and do things through the executive branch, you know, with new regulations? I think that is possible. You may see some stronger regulations on hydraulic fracturing for oil and gas. And I think that'll have a mixed effects on things. The other question is will the administration give states like California wider latitude to regulate automobiles and so forth? That could happen. And then the other big question is whether Biden will try and bring back the Clean Power Plan that Obama tried to put through based on the 1970 Clean Air Act. And, you know, that the Clean Power Plan, which went through a formal EPA rulemaking process, was in big trouble in the courts before Trump came along and pulled the plug on it. So if anything, the courts would be more hostile to it now with the changing composition of the Supreme Court. So I think if Biden wants to try and make progress on his pledge to have a zero emission power sector in 15 years, he probably has to start over again with a new plan that based on the Clean Air Act. And I'm not sure how that's going to work, because I think any plan based on an old piece of legislation meant for a different kind of problem, it's square peg in a round hole. I think it's not going to work very well. And he may ask Congress to pass something, but I doubt there's much appetite for that.
All of that content and more work from IAR staff can be found on our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Thank you for listening. Until next week, I'm Alex Stevens.
Safe are natural gas pipelines.
Pipelines are the safest, most reliable way to move gas. In fact, you really can't move natural gas any other way. You can't get to a home, you can't get to a manufacturing facility without the use of a pipeline.
The amount of savings a customer is seeing is on average $2,000 a year. Think about that, $2,000 in savings.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Resist the understandable urge to drink their award-winning sauces straight from the bottle.
Although if that's your thing, we won't judge.
Greenlee's bold and spicy Pure Rebel Sauce, Ozark Hillbilly Sauce, and sweet and tangy premium finishing sauce. Handcrafted and homemade. Yeah. You can order the sauces online and drool over the menu too. Greenlee'sBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit Lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Cabot has been, you know, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. I'm DC Taylor, along with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. We'll talk about your careers. We've got the job segment coming up in just a couple of minutes. Right now, time for the top five stories of the past week. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So that once again, this week we have for you a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN
over the past 7 days and coming in at number five last week. Even after Chevron, EQT still in hunt to buy CNX and other producers. EQT CEO Toby Rice has been positively chatty lately. He gave a great interview to the Pittsburgh Business Times, revealing his thinking with respect to the recently announced Chevron deal. He also spoke to Bloomberg reporters. Rice shared his views on further consolidation in the Marcellus Utica sector. He indicated EQT is still in the hunt for a deal with CNX and possibly other Marcellus Utica drillers. There are two ways big drillers like EQT can grow revenues for shareholders. One way, which increasingly is verboten, is to drill more wells. The drill, drill, drill mindset is long gone. The second way to grow revenues is to buy another company with already drilled and producing wells and add it to your own portfolio. That's the approach Rice is pursuing. Several weeks ago, Bloomberg reported sources saying EQT wants to take over CNX Resources. CNX isn't interested. Will Rice try a hostile takeover? He has some experience along those lines, which is how he got his current job. Time will tell.
Number four, DC EQT's Toby Rice discusses the Chevron deal, ponders pipe assets. This one, November 12th. Yesterday, Pittsburgh Business Times ace reporter Paul Goh got EQT CEO Toby Rice to open up and talk about the company's recently announced deal to buy Chevron's considerable Marcellus Utica assets. Rice said the Chevron deal fits like a glove and investors will love it. He offered some insight into the bidding process and his thoughts on the pipeline assets that are part of the deal. Rice said EQT's bid on the Chevron acreage was not the lowest bid and not the highest bid. There were others bidding too. However, Rice thinks EQT's bid was the most solid bid, a bid from a company Chevron can trust, to get the deal done in a timely fashion. Chevron wants out of the MU as soon as possible. They view EQT as the best possible option to make it happen. Rice talked about 100 Chevron wells currently drilled that EQT can complete that will bring in revenue quickish. EQT won't need to add any new rigs or frac crews to get the work done over and above what EQT is already operating because of efficiencies. The Chevron deal comes with a 31% ownership stake in Laurel Mountain Midstream. Rice offered several options for what EQT may do with their new pipeline asset.
Okay, the third most popular story over the past week. Three Marcellus Utica wells drilled by DWS break world record for longest onshore. Deep Well Services, DWS, headquartered in Butler County, Pennsylvania, is living up to the company name. DWS is one of our favorite oil field services companies born right here in the Marcellus Utica. DWS specializes in snubbing work, completing those super long laterals you read about. Earlier this year, the company drilled three more record-breaking wells, the longest onshore wells ever drilled in the world. The current record-holding well drilled by DWS, completed just last quarter, is located in Ohio in the Utica Shale, according to DWS spokesman Matt Terigny, quoted in an article. The well has a horizontal or lateral that reaches 19,883 feet, or about 3.8 miles. When you include the vertical portion of the well and measure the entire length of the hole from the tippy top of the well to the toe, or the very last part of the well called measured depth, the distance is an amazing 30,746 feet, or 5.8 miles. Can you imagine pushing pipe through a 5.8 mile hole? Incredible. Who owns the wells and where are these super wells located? So far, the producers have not revealed their identities. We don't know or we would blab it to you. What we do know is that the locations for two of this year's three new record long wells, both Marcellus wells, is somewhere in southwestern Pennsylvania. The new reigning champion for longest onshore well is located somewhere in eastern Ohio. When and if we find out the identities of the companies operating these wells, we'll let you know.
Number two, DC, EOG Resources sells Marcellus assets for $130 million, exits the basin. We have sad news to report. Yesterday, a 50-year-old man was unloading a large excavator off a trailer at natural gas well pad in Lycoming County, Pennsylvania, when the tailgate ramp he was trying to lower knocked him to the ground and landed on his chest, resulting in traumatic asphyxiation. We don't have a lot of details, but we do have some. The man's name was Wayne Newreiter. He hailed from Clearfield County, Pennsylvania, and worked for the Linda Muth Excavating Incorporated. The natural gas well pad where the accident happened is in a remote location on land owned by the state of Pennsylvania, managed by the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. We don't know for certain if it was a shale gas well or a conventional well. We're assuming shale gas since there's not a whole lot of new work in conventional sites these days. And since the site is described as a well pad, pad drilling is used for shale. New Ryder was working alone. When he was found, workers immediately tried to revive him, but it was too late. Our thoughts and prayers are with the New Ryder family. Some sad news for this Thanksgiving week, DC.
Yeah, and all right, the number one most popular story on MDN over the past week, EOG Resources sells Marcellus assets for $130 million and exits the basin. EOG Resources, one of the largest oil and gas drillers in the U.S. with operations in Trinidad and China, too, has just sold all of its Marcellus assets located in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, for $130 million. EOG has now left the Marcellus Utica building. A highly placed source tipped us to this news. He asked us if we had heard about EOG exiting the Marcellus, pointing out this tiny blurb in the company's third quarter update from a few weeks ago. EOG divested its assets in the Marcellus shale effective September 1st, 2020 for proceeds of approximately $130 million. Current production from the divested assets is approximately 40 million cubic feet of natural gas per day, and there were no premium locations associated with the assets. The blurb and the EOG website doesn't report which company the assets were sold to, nor what those assets include. Our trusted source talked to someone with knowledge of the deal and discovered the buyer is Tilden Resources, otherwise known as Tilden Marcellus, with an office in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania. Tilden is essentially the same company as Rockdale Marcellus, better known as Rockdale Energy. The company has assets and drills in both South Texas and northeastern Pennsylvania. And those are the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines, it's each day. It's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at marcellusdrilling.com/email. And now it's time here on the Shale Gas News for the job segment to take a look at some possible careers in the energy industries and the gas industry. It is the job segment brought to you by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Thank you, DC. In Pennsylvania, we'll start out with Alliance OGP LLC, looking for a natural gas technician headquartered in Washington, Pennsylvania. Skoda Contracting, looking for a natural gas utility laborer. That's for their pipeline division out of Bath. It's Northampton County. Gas field specialist, hydrovac laborers needed in Mansfield. CNX looking for a lease operator headquartered in Washington, Pennsylvania. KeyLogic Systems, an energy analyst internship out of Sunbury. New Pig Energy, a field technician opening out of Tyrone. Saturn Power Incorporated, a land procurement agent out of Northeast. Exelon Corporation, a senior training specialist for their gas division out of Conshohocken. And Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future, looking for a center director for their Tonkana campus out of Scranton. Now, in Ohio, Team Fischel looking for a supervisor of natural gas distribution that's out of Columbus. MW Utility has a utilities right-of-way agent opening out of Ohio. You'll be working remotely until the end of this year. Halliburton, the big drillers, a service supervisor for their cementing unit out of Zanesville. Archrock, a gas compressor mechanic out of Cambridge. Centuri Group, looking for a gas crew laborer. That's out of Columbus. KLX Energy Services, a testing assistant for their flowback unit out of New Philadelphia. Exelon Corporation in Ohio, looking for a senior business development manager for their marketing division. That's out of Canton. And Mastech Utility Service, looking for a lineman out of Walton Hills. In West Virginia, the Mountain State, RDR Energy Resources, a residential gas line repair fuse technician that's headquartered in Clarksburg. Team Fischel there looking for a foreman out of Wheeling. Antero Resources Corporation, a mechanic midstream level 3 out of West Union. Shale Pro Energy Services, a measurement technician out of Clarksburg. Diversified Gas and Oil, an automation technician out of Simon. Keystone Clearwater Solutions, a water transfer technician headquartered in Wheeling. And Keystone Consultants, a registered professional land surveyor, would be based in Fairmount. Got a few in New York State. General Electric, looking for a GE gas power technician and an intern based in Schenectady, the head office. Congentrix, looking for a wind turbine technician out of Bliss, New York. New Fortress Energy, two openings, an accounts payable manager for the entire state of New York, and a global supply chain analyst for the entire state of New York. the DDS Corporations with two openings, a heavy equipment operator for their gas distribution division out of Albany, and a foreman for their gas distribution system out of the Finger Lakes. And CHA Consulting, an opening for an electrical transmission line engineer that is based in the state capital of Albany. And those are the jobs this week, as DC mentioned, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. We hope you all have a safe and happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you back here after the holiday weekend. Again, stay safe. For Bill DeRosia, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thank you for listening to the Shale Gas News and our chain of stations, of course, Gem 104, and of course, TalkWilliamsport.com. We'll see you back here next week, same time, same radio stations. The Shale Gas News.